Looking back on DK, like he had, there was areas that we weren't sure on, but there was none maybe that should have prompted us to bypass that. And I think that's one player that sticks out. And I'm sure there's a ton other, and I think every team is probably the same way.
Welcome to Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour, presented by NASCAR on Fox. I'm Kevin Harvick. Thanks for tuning in today. We encourage you to listen anywhere that you catch your podcast. You can follow us on social media at Harvick Happy Pod, anywhere on the social media channels. And today we've got a really fun, very successful guest, and somebody who I've got to know over the years as a race fan, Brett Veach, general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs. And Brett, how are you?
Kevin, I'm doing great. We're 1 week away from the draft, and I guess 2 weeks away from the NASCAR event at Kansas Motor Speedway. So this is a fun time of year, and looking forward to knocking out this draft and then going to the Speedway and having fun with you guys in a few weeks.
Well, I've always enjoyed the time that we've been able to spend at the racetrack. You guys were gracious enough to let us come to your season opener last year, and with Keelan, and take in the first game of the season. And you know, for me, it's always fun to do these crossover type interviews, especially at a time like this. But the first thing I want to ask you about: how in the world did you become a race fan? When did you start watching racing, and what got you involved into paying attention to our sport?
Well, it's funny. I have to give the credit to my older brother, Bob. I'm from Pennsylvania originally. He still lives back in PA. And growing up, he followed NASCAR. He followed motorsports. And I really wasn't into it at all. He was a few years older than I was, and I ended up going to University of Delaware. And one spring he came to visit me, and I had nothing going on. And he said, "Hey, I want to check this race down at Dover. Why don't you come with me?" And I really wasn't that interested, but it's my brother. It's a weekend. There's nothing going on. Went down there, saw the race. And ever since then, I mean, I've been a fan. I think, and you probably hear this a lot, that anyone that appreciates a sport from a distance, once they go, I mean, they're hooked. And that was certainly the case for me. I left that race and I just kind of digested as much information as I could and start following the drivers and the tracks and as much as I could. I think once you see something like that live and the talent, you know, you realize and you have an appreciation that everybody thinks they can drive a car, but I mean, there's very few people that, you know, can do it at that level. And obviously that's why it's cool talking to you today, because you were one of the best to ever do it.
Well, I appreciate that. And you're one of the best to ever do what you do. You guys are obviously very successful. You've been in the NFL for 18 years. You've won three Super Bowls. And I to go back on that, so you talk about watching. I mean, do you have a favorite driver now? Who would you pick to be your favorite driver in today's NASCAR world?
Well, I'm off the hook now because Clint Boyer retired. So certainly I would have had to say Clint just because of his relationship with us, and he's been great. But I've been very fortunate and blessed because of the job I have to meet a lot of great people. So it's more so the person and, you know, who I know. And, you know, I've gotten obviously the Stuart Haas people. So you and Clint, through a mutual friend here at the Kansas City Chiefs, I've gotten to know Kyle Busch really well. And then our mutual friend, Chad Wheeler, he's close with Kyle Larson. So I've gotten to say hi and talk to him. So all those guys that I've been able to spend time with and get to know, I really appreciate. It's funny, with Kyle Busch, he's one of those guys when I followed it before I was doing what I was doing. Didn't like Kyle Busch. And I mean, he was a villain, if you will, in the NASCAR circuit. And then you get to meet him and you just realize he's wired just like you are. He just wants to win at all costs and doesn't care what people think or what they say. Like, he's just going to do his thing. So since getting to meet him and know him, I obviously a great appreciation for him. But I mean, the one cool thing that I've always appreciated in my time going to NASCAR events and getting the opportunity to spend time with you guys is how like hospitable and gracious those events are. I mean, you get to do a lot of cool things when you're in this type of position and go to a lot of events. And Kevin, we were just talking about the F1 race, but the people at NASCAR are just so accommodating. And when you go there, it's not just a wave or here's a section to view the race. I mean, they give you whatever access that you want, and they let you experience everything, anything you want. I remember I took Coach Reed to his first NASCAR race like 3 years ago, and Pat Warren, it was giving us the garage passes we were walking through. And I was basically telling Coach, you can kind of go wherever you want, and I'll introduce you to drivers. And I think Austin Dillon saw him, pulled him right in the garage and right through the specs and all that stuff. And that was really cool. But the cool thing is, it's not just Coach Reed. It's really, they treat everyone like that. And I think that's the really cool thing about your sport.
So I want to back up a little bit here. We're going to back up to your t-shirt. You mentioned Chad Wheeler. So are you a sim racer?
So, I mean, I don't know if you would classify me as a sim racer. I'm more of a novice. So actually I have to give credit, to your manager, Josh, because during COVID, there wasn't a lot to do. And you won that Darlington race during COVID, right? Darlington, yes. Yeah. So I have a pretty good memory. And I was sitting there, we were watching the races, but a few weeks prior to that, I think you guys were hopping on and doing the virtual racing. So I called Eric and I was like, man, there's nothing going on. How much do you think one of these costs? And this would be really cool to have. And Eric was like, I got a guy. Harvick's guy, Josh, like he knows everybody. So he got me in touch with Josh. Josh got me in touch with Chad. And I have two of them now. I have one that just does the F1 stuff, and then one of them that just does the NASCAR stuff. So the F1 stuff is more of like EA type driven stuff, because it's really a little bit too technical for me, those cars. Not that I'm any good at anything, but I can at least be functional to a point where I can have fun but I enjoy it. And I understand your son's obviously super talented at that too. So I don't think I'm at your son's level, but I'm enough to occupy myself with some free time.
So do you get on there and just practice, or do you actually get in some races and get in there and compete?
Yeah. So I don't, what I do is kind of the computer racing, and they have the skill level, and I just try to, it usually takes me about 2 or 3 weeks to get like competent at a track. So I'll just hop on a track, say Kansas Motor Speedway. And then, I'll start at that middle level and, then try to work my way up and see how I can go. But then, I got frustrated. I was actually calling Clint because, once you get to a certain level, those cars run like perfect lines every single lap. And then you get to the point where you realize that if you don't know how to set up a car and to make little tweaks, like you're not going to be like the elite level computer racing, because they just run the same line and it's perfect every single time. So I was literally like sending, the setup page of the car. I don't know anything about setting a car up. So I would be sending Chad and Clint some videos and some screenshots of, how do I adjust this car? Cause it just, this thing, I cannot keep the back end down after 10 laps, and especially against this level of competition. So they try to give me pointers every now and then, but I'm sure they have better things to do than to sit there on a phone call and help me adjust a car on a simulator.
So have you ever driven any race cars or anything outside on a real racetrack?
No, I've not.
Street cars, anything?
No. Haven't on the bucket list to do. Again, Pat Warren, track president at Kansas Motor Speedway, he's invited me out a few times, and it's certainly something that is on the bucket list to do. We have, and I'm sure you can relate to this, because when you were driving, I mean, the schedules are so crazy, where our schedules are like ridiculous. It's we start in July. I mean, there's more games now, than there used to be in the past, and so we end up starting, our training camp is in July, and then if you're fortunate enough to have a good season like we've had in the past, you're playing until February. And then right from February, you go into the free agency period. Then you go into the draft. And then the rookies come in and the new players come in for OTAs. And so you're leaving in June and you're coming back. You're leaving mid-June and you're coming back mid-July. So it's really an 11-month process for us. So once I'm able to find a way to work out some free time in my schedule, it's certainly on the bucket list of things to do. Get to a track and cut some laps.
Do you have like a car collection, any fancy cars, anything in your garage?
No. Well, listen, I'm pretty basic. I'm a Ford guy. Been a Ford guy my whole life, I think. I got a again, I love the NASCAR and everything about it. And so I have a Roush Raptor and GT500, and those are all you need here in Missouri. So
I'm good with those. Some normal cars. But what was your first car? What was your first car that you remember having?
So it's funny because I was listening to some of your podcasts here, and I was laughing when you had Joe Girardi on, and he mentioned a Ford Tempo. But my first car was a Ford Tempo. My great aunt passed away. I didn't have a car in high school at all, and I didn't actually have a car my freshman year in college. My great aunt passed away, and they were going through some of her old belongings. She had like a 92 Ford Tempo, and I said, look, I'll take it. It'll get me from point A to point B. So had that. I think it had 150,000 miles on it, and I think I got a year out of it before it kind of blew up on the side of the road. So,
Did you leave it?
I started with a Ford. Yeah.
Did you leave it there?
I remember I got towed. It was in the parking lot after one class. It just wouldn't start. And I rolled the dice as long as I could with that car. I think there were multiple occasions where it was stalling out on Main Street on campus there, and super embarrassing when you're, you know, a college kid and your car's kind of stalling out in between classes. But I did find a way to get through a year with it. And I think it just died in a parking lot somewhere.
Well, let's get down to business. You're obviously in the middle of work. You guys are coming off, obviously, the best season that you can possibly have. You've done this before. You're going into the draft. Where do you start? You've got great players. You've got high-end players. You've got young players. And you guys always seem to have a good mixture and balance, with the young versus old, and knowing when to get rid of somebody, when to keep somebody. How do you approach the draft? How do you say, okay, I need to address this position, this guy's leaving that? Where do you start?
Yeah, well, I mean, it really starts, I guess you can say it never ends, but I mean, it's an ongoing process. It's something that's always fluid. And I think the one thing that you learn in our league is that it's long, and it's really a battle of attrition. So I think, and I've learned this over the years, every team and every fan of a team will look at a roster and say, well, we need a wideout, we need a lineman, we need a linebacker, and what have you. And that's certainly true with every team, and it's something that you do factor in. But you also realize that when you start week one, like we did against Detroit, you say in your mind as a GM that the starting lineup will look completely different by the time you get to the end of the season. And it's not a question of if you will lose players, but just when. And so I think that helps you stay disciplined to the approach. And every position is a position of need. And that's how we look at it. And so that's why we always want to stick with the most talented player on the board. And I mean, if teams can look at the Chiefs and say, well, they need a wideout and they need a tackle. Well, that's true. But we will eventually need a defensive lineman and a corner. And if we have a defensive lineman or a corner that we have graded really high, I mean, we need to just stick to our board and take those players, because time flies and before you know it, you're going to have needs at every position. So it is a little bit of a balance. And I think once you get into specific rounds, and if the values of the player are close, then you would defer to the position of need. But if the values are different, you may not think you absolutely have, need that position. But if the values are extremely different, I think you just go with the player. A few years ago, I remember going into training camp and having concerns about some O-line stuff and some receiver stuff. And I remember talking to my staff saying, we're really good at defensive end. I mean, that's one position we don't have to worry about. And then by week eight, I think we lost four of them to injury. Mm-hmm. So that's just an example of, thinking you're good at a position, and within a month or two, having that position be completely depleted. So it's one of those things that I think as a GM, you keep in the back of your mind that you're going to need all these players at some point. Injuries happen. So always stick to the board and stick with the most talented player. And that's, we spend a ton of time on this board and hundreds of names on the board, and just kind of work and stack and tear them. And we tweak that process all the way up into the draft. And it's something that we'll continue to do today and the rest of the week and until we get to Thursday.
So in our sport, I always talk about the chemistry between the crew chief and the engineers, and everything in the team can overcome a little bit of talent. How far do you go and research an individual as to who you think they are and how that fits into your team?
Yeah, I mean, a ton. And that's critically important. And so the way NFL departments are set up, they have a pro scouting staff that deals with the the NFL teams, and I mean, they're going to know the schemes they like to use and the personnel packages they like to use. And then we have a college scouting system that deals just with the guys in the draft. And I think I have a college scout in the Northeast, the Southeast, obviously Southwest, West Coast, middle of the country. So we have an area scout, we call them, place all over the country. And they literally spend the entire year just visiting schools and documenting information. And I always talk about how important those guys are during this time of year, because I think we can all sit there and watch tape and get a relatively good idea of what the player can do on the field. But it's the person that really ultimately determines how successful they will be and how successful they will be both on and off the field. And, you know, so meeting with the college coaches, meeting with the trainers, meeting with the equipment room people, meeting with the academic advisors. I mean, you name it. I mean, my guys even go back and touch base with high school contacts and high school coaches and just try to get an idea of how this guy's wired and what's he like under adversity and what type of people he hangs around with and just who he is as a person. And it's extremely critical. And that's why we spend so much time doing what we're doing. You can always, again, watch the athlete on tape, but it's the person at the end of the day. And it's a big part of what we do. And I'm very fortunate. We have a great staff that the guys that I have in my career are some of the best in the business. So we've been very, very good and successful the last few years. And again, looking forward to Thursday and another strong class to help our team go for that ever elusive three-peat. Hasn't been done. A back-to-back Super Bowl hasn't been done in 20 some years, and I guess so. We were able to do that yesterday, so now we're looking to make a little history next year and go for 3 in a row.
Well, you guys have obviously done a great job, but you have a pretty well documented story in everything that you did with Patrick Mahomes and how he was recognized, and I'm curious, because we talk about our Cup drivers and how it takes 100 races to really get their feet on the ground, understand the dynamic of the sport and the car, everything that comes with that. Patrick, you guys drafted him, you put him on the bench, he learned, obviously got the opportunity, and the rest is history. You see some of the other teams put their newly drafted quarterbacks right into the game. Explain to me how those strategies differ. And what you thought was the right process, you and your team thought was the right process to have him sit and learn, or where he was at, and why some of these other teams just throw their quarterbacks right into the game, and how that can be good or bad.
Well, I think our situation, it was a little bit of a luxury that we had, and it was part of the process that we wanted to be proactive and set our young quarterback up for success. So at the time we drafted Pat, we actually had a Pro Bowl quarterback in Alex Smith, and he was entering the final stages of his contract. And we certainly fell in love with Pat during that process. And, you know, one of the things that was important to our staff and to Coach Reed was to bring a young guy in here. And the games are certainly different from college to the NFL level. And it's really a pass protection oriented league where, colleges are a little bit more of a run and gun, fast pace. You see the coaches with plays on car stock on the sidelines, and you know, everything is up tempo. And I think sometimes the collegiate offenses are simplified, and these guys are coming in for a few years and they're leaving, so they have to keep it that way. Where the NFL is a little bit more complicated, and I think the one thing that all quarterbacks have to master is just pass protection, getting themselves in and out of plays called, into plays that will be more successful. And the one thing that Coach and I believed in was bringing Pat in here and allowing him to just process defenses and coverages and tendencies and how to master the pass protections and where you're going to shift your lines and where you're going to send your running backs to blitz, pick up different blitz packages. So it was one of those things where if you throw a young quarterback out there and he's not quite there, how much long-term effect does it have on him mentally, where he's seeing ghosts or overthinking? So we knew Pat had a ton of talent, can make any throw asked of him, super athletic, smart, but didn't have a lot of experience with some of the NFL blitz package stuff. And Alex Smith on the other end was a veteran that has been there, done that, super smart, He was one of those guys that he went to Utah, but he could have gotten into any Ivy League school he wanted. So it was just a great setup we had where we thought we can bring Pat in here and have him learn and see the game, not only through Coach Reed's eyes, but see it through Alex Smith's eyes, understand the mental side of things. And then when he does have to play, he can just cut it loose because he's absorbed the system and the terminology for a year. Now, again, we had that luxury and we were able to do that because we had a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback on the final stages of his contract. You know, some teams don't have that luxury. Some teams, the new guy, even if the terminology is new and it's difficult, he's still going to be better than any option you have. So I think it's one of those ideal dream scenarios that every team would love to have a veteran quarterback and bring it a young guy in and transition him. But more often than not in the league, what you see is just a quarterback not working out, a team moving on, and then a young guy having to get out there and learn on the fly. So I think it's a little bit more difficult. I think if teams had a choice, they would like to do what we did. But again, I think sometimes you just need the stars to align and things to work out. And we were blessed and fortunate that it did for us.
What's the best player that you guys were like, you know what? We missed on that guy. What's the best player that the Kansas City Chiefs didn't get?
Oh, man. That's a good, I mean, there's so many. So I feel like there's so
that
many
was,
of them.
That, well, I mean, just there's gotta be one that sticks out that was something happened or came off the board earlier or whatever the scenario was. Like what was the one that you think about all the time that you were like, man, that was a miss.
That's such a good question. I think there are some guys that if you miss on guys, DK Metcalf might be a guy that stands out just because the limited pass tree. I think there were some injury concerns. And sometimes I think what you learn through the process, especially with these injuries, and I'm fortunate that we have a great training staff and Rick Burkholder, our trainer, we've been together for a long time. But our relationship was different when I was a scout as opposed to GM and just understanding and learning the terminology. But I think sometimes getting clarification on injury status and the likelihood of someone making the contract. I mean, sometimes – you know, you don't take guys and fans do the mock drafts and they go through them and they're like, well, we should have taken this, like years later, we should have taken this guy or that guy. But at the time, a player could have been off your board because you had character concerns or an injury concern. And so I think looking back on DK, like there was areas that we weren't sure on, but there was none maybe that should have prompted us to bypass that. And I think that's one player that sticks out. And I'm sure there's a ton other, and I think every team is probably the same way. I'm sure there's a lot of teams that were too low on Pat Mahomes and saying that quarterbacks from the Texas Tech air raid style of offense don't work out. So I think every team has it. And I think it's useful because you learn stuff from why you didn't select a guy at the time. And, you know, it's been helpful for me. Sometimes the big misses help you grow into a better GM and you're better off for it in the long run.
So you guys have been super successful. You obviously have a great relationship with your coach. You know, he's one of a kind, it seems, from a leadership standpoint. You have all this success. You see Taylor Swift coming into your stadium. You see all the eyes in the world, and then you go out and you win. I watch one of the moments last year that I watched on the sidelines was when Travis Kelce threw his helmet. And Andy Reid come over, get right in the middle of it, completely control the situation. Tell me about your relationship with him, how you guys navigate through all of these difficult situations, start the year, whether you started fast, whether you started slow. You got players that throw helmets on the sidelines. You've got Taylor Swift coming into the stadium with all the attention in the world. How do you navigate that with Andy and how do you guys work through all that when there's a problem? Because it seems like there's obviously great communication between the two of you.
Yeah. A lot of communication, a lot of trust. The thing about Andy and his personality, it kind of never changes. So he's always the same person every day. He's extremely consistent, and players nowadays are really smart and they're more educated through social media and the union. And I think the one thing that, you know, not only does coach have a incredible track history, which speaks for itself and resume that speaks for itself, but I think players genuinely appreciate his authenticity. And he's one of those guys that he treats everyone the same, and he's very consistent on his daily approach. And I think when things go bad, he's the same guy as, you know, when things are going really good, and he never gets ahead of himself. And I think, you know, that in addition to him being wired as a coach, but I think coach has an education background, and he always says, like, at the end of the day, he's a teacher and he wants to make people better on and off the field. And then listen, there's a business aspect to it. And a lot of these situations and relationships, you know, when it's not Sundays, comes down to the contract, and we all get that. But I think the players genuinely appreciate his authenticity as a person. His work ethic is, you know, unmatched. I mean, he's still a guy. I mean, he's 65 years old. He's been doing this for years. I think his third or fourth all-time in career wins in the NFL, and he's still pulling up in the office at 6 a.m., and he's still the last one out of the office at 8 or 9 p.m. every night, and he never changes. And they know that whatever angle coach is approaching them with, that it's only trying to make them better. They understand it and they appreciate it. And I think I've had the good fortune of really kind of being brought up in that system. I started out as an intern for Coach Reed back in like 2007. So I had a chance to be an intern and work on the coaching side and work my way up through the scouting side. But at every step of my career and working my way up, it's always been working with coach, and I've been able to see the game through his eyes. And, you know, Kevin, you asked that question before about how much this character play into it. And that's one of the things that fundamentally coaches, you know, taught me from day one. And that's, we're only going to go as far as the people in the building and not the talent. So getting the right people, getting the right character is where you start. And then from there, our coaches will take over, because if they're wired the right way and they have the right work ethic and the right passion for the game, and, you know, then our coaches will be able to maximize their talent. So that's the one thing that coach and I have since day one been united on. And I think that's what's helped lead to not just success over a year or two, but now we're going on how many years in a row. I think we have like eight or nine. I don't even know AFC West titles. So it's been a lot. We've been very successful. But I think just like coach's personality, we're consistent and we don't change. And we approach this offseason as if we had a losing season last year and we're trying to find a way to get to the playoffs. And that's kind of the mentality we work with.
So did you have to learn any Taylor Swift songs last year? I mean, that seemed to be mandatory. Well, because I have a 6-year-old little girl, and I asked her before the Super Bowl. Yeah. It's a funny video on my social media. I said, "All right, who are you rooting for?" She's like, "What's the name of the team that Taylor Swift's boyfriend plays for?" So that it's annoying to watch from my standpoint. But from a fan standpoint, my little girl thinks it's the most amazing thing in the world because she knows every Taylor Swift song that there is. So how, I mean, did you have to get an album? Are you a fan or what's the deal?
I can relate. I have a 13-year-old daughter. So,
perfect.
Yeah. So the whole deal there, she came to Arrowhead. So the concert, and then I don't know if your wife and Piper did the concert. And then the crazy phenomenon is the release of the concert on video. And so I was joking with my friends that, and it was great. Obviously the show was awesome, and you have an appreciation for her talent, just amazing. But the weird dynamic was we went to the concert, and then my wife and my daughter go see the movie of the concert. Okay, that's so cool. And then now it's released on streaming, and now it's like every Friday it's on our TV, and it's like, you know, I love it, but it's a lot. But no, it's been fun. And the guys, it was funny because you would think that the players and how they like to joke around and get on each other would kind of take over the scene here, because it was a phenomenon and it still is. I remember the first game she attended was the Chicago Bears game. And I think right after that, we have a couple of young assistants that play the music at practice, and they started off with one of our practices with a Taylor Swift song. And like Travis looked at Pat, and Pat kind of shook his head, and they just told him like, no more of that. And so since that day, Taylor Swift has never been played at practice, and no one talks about it at all in our facility. Now, obviously, you know, you have a lot of friends and family, and they always want to come out and do games and call and ask about the team. But certainly the number one asked question that I had the entire season had nothing to do with the opponent or the game or the, you know, where we were in the season. It was, did you get to meet Taylor Swift? Did you get to meet Taylor
Swift?
Terrible.
That's the part that annoys me when I watch the game, but it is what it is. That's what happens. That's what happens when you have high level, you know, individuals that are playing for your team and you have to deal with stuff like that. But well, I appreciate you taking the time today. I wish you nothing but the best of luck, with the upcoming draft and the upcoming season. And I appreciate all the hospitality and you always being a big supporter.
Real quick. I don't know if you know, I just hired an assistant that was actually got his start in NASCAR and wanted to say hi real quick. Just because it's that time of season and that's how we do things. Hi, Kevin.
Oh,
You didn't ask the question about his new assistant. We were setting that up.
I just assumed that was who started the Zoom call. I didn't expect Eric Stonestreet to pop into the Zoom call, but you would make a great assistant.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate
you. You look good. Are you there working on the board?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what he told you, is that this is my time of year that I come in, give my input of all the tape I've watched in my own time at home. And I know you think I'm joking, but I'm not, about the tape I watch. He doesn't really take my input because he's a professional and I'm a fan.
That's great.
He's had a couple good ones over the years. So he's a man of conviction. And when he believes in a player, you know, it doesn't matter what the rest of the room thinks. He'll get up there and stand on the table for guys that he really believes in. So I appreciate that for sure.
Well, we appreciate that. We appreciate all the Andy Reid skits. So I'm expecting nothing more than some great skit to start the season.
Oh, Randy Reid died in a horrible jet ski crash. You don't know that?
Well, either way, we need to bring him back.
No, he's gone. He's retired. Randy Reid's gone, baby. Retired.
No, we need his brother. We need his brother then.
Yeah. Well, we got to talk to Andy about that. This was great. I was listening the whole time. This is awesome show. What do you got to do to get on your podcast?
You got to know somebody. Well, I'll give you a call.
We'll work on that with the assistant.
All right. See you, Kevin. Say hi to everybody.
All right. See you guys. Yep. Brett, thanks for taking the time today. Thanks for watching Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour presented by NASCAR on Fox. You can follow us on YouTube or pick us up anywhere on social media at Harvick Happy Pod. Thanks for watching today.